Men, there's a drive-in movie full of juicy people. Wow! It's a trap! Help! It's Pick! We've had it, men.
A pleasant aroma for you, but not for mosquitoes. Pick is easy to use. Light it and forget it. Pick's aroma keeps mosquitoes, gnats, and sandflies away. Pick is the best protection for barbecues, fishing and camping trips, or just relaxing in the yard.
So if you don't want our company ever anywhere, just light Pick and see what I mean? Bye!
Get more out of life. Go out to a movie.
Hello, everyone. This is Jim, and it's time for Stuff We've Seen. They're movies and shows that we've seen. Stuff We've Seen. We don't care if you haven't, but we haven't seen it.
So I think you should just cut that little piece and use that as the intro to every show.
I don't know about that, but, you know, listeners, if anybody has some musical skill out there and has the equipment to do so,
we could use a jingle.
We could use a jingle, yeah. But it would have to sound kind of like some of the music that I have at the beginning of every show, kind of like maybe a funky little
Yeah,
thing.
Basically, if you make us a jingle and we don't like it, we won't use it.
Well, that's true. You know, you can make it. So a little story there. By the way, everybody, look, on the other end of the mic, it's our longtime pal and permanent special guest co-host, Teal.
Hi. How's it going? Good to be here.
So my son, you just said about the musical thing. So my son, he plays the drums.
Right.
You know, he's just learning, you know, he's new. And he has this program on his computer that they use through school where, like, they actually have a music sheet put up and they can create notes and make music.
Cool.
Yeah. So I said to him, I played him a couple of pieces of music and I said, here, you heard that? You get that sense? Now go make me a theme.
Has he come back yet?
He did. It needs a little work. It's maybe not, you know, ready. But see, I'll cut anybody out, and if I don't like it, I'll
right.
say no.
Even your own son. Nope, not good yeah. enough.
It's not good enough.
Back to the drawing board.
I went to GarageBand and was playing around, and I created some things that sounded very John Carpenter-y, but it really wasn't. Again, right for the show.
Yeah,
so I cut myself out.
We don't need John Carpenter type music for the show, I don't think.
No, but that's about as good as I could do, and I realized that's about as good as he could do. But I love John Carpenter music. It's just, you know, it's not right for the opening of our show.
Right.
That doesn't mean there might not be a time when I'm going to use one of those John Carpenter opening themes.
You know, that said, if John Carpenter wants to make us a jingle for the show...
He's in.
He's
I will not deny John Carpenter, the almighty. I am not going to say no to him because, I mean, we grew up on all of his scores.
Yeah.
Love him. If anybody out there has the chops and doesn't mind that we may say no if we don't think it's
Is Jerry
right
Goldsmith
for the
still alive? He'd be good.
No, but I love Jerry Goldsmith. I do. I
How about Randy Newman? Is Randy Newman still alive?
Randy Newman is still alive. And then one of my favorites was Elmer Bernstein.
Yeah.
He's no longer with us.
Right. Okay. And yeah. And I'll tell you right now, if John Williams makes us a jingle, he's out.
Yeah. You know, he's a guy that maybe it's time to retire.
Yeah.
Love him. I mean,
he could have retired.
But a lot of his stuff.
It all sounds the same now.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, if Spielberg really wants to stretch... He's got to go, like, I love his cinematographer that he uses sometimes.
Who, Janos Kaminski?
Yeah.
Okay.
But other times, it's just not the right look for the films that Spielberg is doing.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
I really think their partnership is problematic.
Yeah, because I'll look at the movies they did together that I really thought that the cinematography was cool and innovative.
Yeah.
Schindler's List.
Yep.
Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. Minority Report.
Oh, and interesting.
And Munich.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's pretty much it. And the rest of them kind of are very samey.
Yeah. I didn't have necessarily a problem with Lincoln. And I saw that in the theater. But he does this thing where he has that like sort of washed out gritty glow.
Yes.
And it works occasionally. And other times it looks very artificial.
I hated the cinematography in Lincoln.
I know, that's why I mentioned it, but you didn't see it in the big screen, right?
No, I didn't see it on the big screen, but I just thought it's not the lighting that I hated, it's the framing that I hated. And Spielberg does a lot of this just like, the Post movie? Oh, God, that was...
Horrible. Did you see... But you didn't see the whole thing.
No, I did. I ended up watching the whole thing.
Oh, you finally watched it?
I finally watched it. And it's just like, I don't know, there's people talking. Just put a Steadicam over there.
You know what my problem with The Post was? Well, A, it just... That particular story didn't resonate the way it should have if it was maybe made 30 or 40 years ago. The second thing is, we have a really good frame of reference, which is all the president's men.
Exactly.
And the look of that. And that's 1976 when they shot it, which is just a few years from the time that the movie takes place. And all you have to do is we watch that movie and then you watch this and it feels like people that are dressed in wigs and costumes and sets. It doesn't feel real.
It feels like a set. And I felt the same way about parts of Ready Player One.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of CGI, and actually, the part I thought was going to be really bad was the part when they go into the, you know, to the Oasis. But yet that part was really good.
That part was good. No, it's the other stuff that I'm talking about. The stuff driving around in the van, which I just think like is silly and dumb.
And it's weird is that he shoots on film.
Yes.
Again, it's just a tough, you know, tough thing. We keep talking about this and talking about it, or I do anyway, the way films look today.
Well, the reason I don't talk about it quite as much as you do is because I've given up.
I never will give up.
I've given up.
I won't give up and accept. And it's funny, I was watching a movie with my oldest. We haven't quite finished it yet. And it is Tootsie.
Oh, yeah.
From 1982.
I saw it in the theater. My parents took me to see it when it came out.
My mom took my sister and I, and I remember at the time loving it.
Yes, I loved it too.
But here's why I mentioned it, is watch that film. It's a comedy, and it's shot 2.35, which back then, not a lot of comedies were. Now, every movie that's made seems to be shot 2.35. But what the cinematographer Owen Roizman does is so fantastic. First of all, it's just a matter of how they use the frame in that movie.
Roizman is just fantastic.
The lighting scheme, it's so bright. Like when you see a city street, it looks like what you think a bright, New York City in the day. Now, everything digital, it always has this thing where I feel like the shading of digital is a little off.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite, like, I feel like film looks more like real life a lot of times than digital does.
I think that, well, and I think, again, it just really depends. Some people have figured out how to do it. And I was reading this thing about Steven Soderbergh, and I think I told you about this when I read it. He's been shooting iPhone movies. And he said part of what's interesting is there's things the sensor can't do or doesn't do well. And he was saying that using that almost as an advantage, look at what it doesn't do well and turn that into an advantage. And I think some people are still trying to treat video or digital as though it's film, as opposed to treating it as its own thing with its own set of limitations and advantages. And how can you actually push that to get maybe something that's not film-like, but something that's its own thing that works, you know, that looks good, that is that communicates the story, all that kind of stuff. But I think you're right that sometimes film does look more real.
Yeah, I think a lot of times with today's cameras, it's sort of just like, oh, it's digital, And there's not really a lot of thought that goes in. It's sort of like it's now just a piece of equipment to capture our story on film.
Yes.
And they don't really care what the look is or something. And it really bothers me. And when I go back and watch a film like Tootsie had to do so many different things. First of all, Owen Roizman, and probably why it's so high-key lighting, is he had to figure a way to photograph Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
So he wasn't going to scare people because the makeup, it just wasn't quite there. But so he had to figure out a way to photograph him so that he could be believable as a woman. And then you have this dynamic of shooting scenes that were probably on sets, but make them look like they were real locations,
right,
versus how they shot the TV studio things, which was on a set and was to look like a set. I mean, there's so many different levels to the lighting that goes on in that movie that I think it's one of those underrated things that people don't really pay attention to when they watch a movie like Tootsie.
Yeah. And I think I was just going to point out one of my favorite Owen Roizman films, and it's one of my favorite films of all time anyway, is Network.
That's right. Oh, well, yeah, there's so many. That's another thing. It's a movie where you don't really think about the cinematography.
Yeah.
And yet, if you start thinking about the cinematography, it is really, really good.
It's really good. And what he does in that film is at the beginning, it starts off pretty grainy and realistic. And slowly over the course of the film, the cinematography becomes more slick.
But it's so subtle.
It's so subtle. But by the end of the movie, it looks totally slick. The grain is gone. It's lit in a different way. And so he actually changes the style of the cinematography over the course of the film, which is just brilliant and works.
And by the way, Owen was nominated for Best Cinematography for Network and Tootsie,
yeah,
as well as The Exorcist.
As well as The Exorcist. Another movie of his that I really like, which I think is a hugely underrated film, I won't even call it a guilty pleasure because I think it's a pretty good movie, is Wyatt Earp.
Oh, he was nominated for that too.
Yeah.
I love Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
That was a movie that I saw in the theater, and it suffered from the fact that it came out shortly after Tombstone.
Exactly.
It wasn't a massive hit, but it was sort of where people were like, I don't need to revisit
Tombstone
it.
Tombstone was a pretty big hit.
It was, I mean, I don't think it was a monster smash.
It wasn't a monster hit, but it made some money. I'm not going to look it up right now, but it did pretty well.
And I think that, again, that got there first, and people didn't want to necessarily see a three-hour version.
Right.
But it was great. I mean, it was a very engrossing movie, very underrated.
Very underrated film, yeah. And kind of
Lawrence
forgotten.
Lawrence Kasdan?
Lawrence Kasdan directed it, yeah.
Yep.
And Owen Roizman's nighttime photography in that is fantastic.
Yeah, so there's another thing where, you know, I think digital, where some cinematographers can succeed, is digital can do night very well.
Yes.
But cinematographers who had to do it before digital came around that could do it well would be like Owen Roizman and Roger Deakins.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and, you know, you bring up Deakins, and he's one of the people who has figured out how to use digital.
Yeah, he actually loves digital.
Yeah.
Now. Like, he just feels for him, but not everybody is Roger Deakins.
Cold War is shot on digital.
Yeah, so that's a film that I saw it projected digitally, and it was digital. And by the way, seeing it projected digitally, I noticed that difference. Like, I looked at it and said, I wished that this had been printed on film, which, believe it or not, there are some 35mm prints out there,
right,
of Cold War, which would be just beautiful to look at. But it's a film that, like, visually, I would not have known that was shot on digital.
I didn't know it was shot on digital. It looks like film to me.
And Roma, the other black and white movie,
yeah,
that's shot on the Alexa 65. And what I think is what's great about what Alfonso Cuarón does there is he's not going for film color.
And right.
He's not going for film black and white. He's going for something that looks completely different.
Well, and that's what needs to be done. And I feel like that's what Deakins has figured out is that, and that's that what I was saying about Soderbergh too, is it's its own thing. You shouldn't be trying to imitate film. You should be using this other medium to its best extent.
Which, by the way, this is another thing. Like, can't somebody who's like tooling around with the technology here to computers, couldn't they try to work on advancing it so it does look like film? I'm not against digital as a medium, but I think it could get there.
What, to get there to looking like film?
Yeah.
It probably could, but I think a lot of films already do tons of post-processing to make it look like that. And
yeah, but you know what the problem is? So here's, and this just made me think of it, because again, watching Tootsie, one of the things that drives me mental, and I don't know whether it's the digital camera part or the lenses used, but everything is so sharp that even the stuff that's out of focus.
Yes.
In the background has a sharpness.
Yes.
That just makes it not, it's a different medium.
It's a different medium. Well, it doesn't.
You don't have something that is going through a camera at 24 frames a second, capturing light a certain way.
Right.
And it creates a chemical process and it looks, you know, digital doesn't do that.
You don't get what are called on film circles of confusion.
Circles of confusion.
Which are essentially, like you said, it's a chemical process, but it's what happens with stuff that's out of focus on film versus out of focus on digital. And that's what you're talking about, is the sharpness of the background. In film, the way the light blooms on in the chemicals creates these, what are literally circles, which are like larger pixels. But they're not pixels. They're chemical blooms that give it this glow and this graininess that's very different than the sharpness you get with digital.
And I don't think it's as bad or noticeable when you're seeing it on the big screen. But when it comes to the small screen, which was what we're seeing more and more of these things lately, it has this artificiality.
Yeah, and I also, you know, I want to add that some people probably have their TVs set up wrong.
Well, how so?
Frame interpolation.
Frame interpolation.
A lot of modern TVs have frame interpolation turned on by default.
Well, this isn't, you're not talking about the motion blur stuff, are you?
No, it's related to it, though. But they basically, this takes something that's 24 frames a second, or 30, right, in video, and it makes frames in between those. And so it's actually making 60 frames. Yeah, it digitally creates frames in between the frames that already exist. And so it gives it an even more digital look.
Yeah, but isn't that like that? That's what I'm sort of talking about with the true motion stuff. If it's still, it's fine. Yeah. But when it moves, it looks like it's just in the soap opera.
It's great for things like live sports.
Yeah, I shut that off, but it's still, you know, you're still, again, you kind of hit it there again with the circles of confusion. They're different mediums.
Yeah.
They look different. And that as much as we try to get it to look like film, it doesn't always 100% look that way.
There's a huge amount of work that's done in post. If you look at raw footage from digital, it looks terrible. It's completely washed out because the idea is to get as much range as possible. And then in post-processing, you bring in contrast and levels of detail and all that kind of stuff. But the images look completely flat and washed out of the camera.
Yeah, and so what's happening is the art of the cinematography on set.
Exactly.
Like, it's not translating, because then decisions are getting made in the editing room, potentially.
Yes.
But anyways, you know, I just mentioned 1982 for a second.
Yeah.
And I remember that Tootsie that year was my second favorite film of the year.
And let me see if I can guess your first favorite film of the year. E.T.?
No, Missing.
Oh, Missing. Yeah.
No, E.T. was. E.T., the extraterrestrial, is probably like most kids' favorite film.
Now, Missing is that Costa Gavras film with Jack Lemmon?
It was, in Sissy Spacek. Great movie, by the way.
Yeah, I like that movie quite a bit.
E.T., you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark the year before put Spielberg on the map for me.
Yes, and I think for many people in America.
Yeah, and then so E.T., I remember that spring, I was very, very excited because it was like a 1-2 punch. We were getting Poltergeist and we were getting E.T. And we didn't know a lot about E.T. because it was kind of shrouded in secrecy.
Yeah, well, I remember looking through, you know, I lived down in the middle of nowhere. I didn't have the same awareness of these things you did because we didn't have TV, so I wouldn't see trailers and things like that. You know, the Thursday night movie ads for whatever was opening on Friday. So the first I heard about E.T. was looking at the ad in the paper.
That's interesting. So no Starlog subscription?
No, I didn't have, at this time, I didn't have a Starlog subscription. I had earlier, but at this time I didn't. And also, you know, I would often just buy Starlog at the newsstand.
Yeah, I would go, we would like go to Osco Drug.
Yes.
I would, while my mom was doing whatever shopping, I was in the magazine aisle looking at Fangoria, Starlog, and Mad Magazine.
Yes, that's yes. We had the same childhood.
well, not exactly.
Yeah, so my sister and I were looking at the paper, and there was this ad for E.T., and it said, E.T., the extraterrestrial, and we didn't know what an extraterrestrial was. We had to look it up, and then we thought, oh, it's about an alien. That sounds kind of cool. Maybe we should see that. So my parents took us.
So it had been out for a little bit?
No, I think that was like opening week.
Is this the one where you had to stand up and watch it?
No.
Oh, so it was the second time?
I think it might have been the third or fourth time. And we were on the coast of Maine, and we were sailing. We were on a sailing trip, and we would stop at different islands, you know, and anchor for the night and sleep on the boat and then sail off to a different island the next day. A lot of people do this on the coast of Maine. And one of the islands we stopped on had a movie house, sort of a movie house. It was actually the top floor of an Oddfellows Hall. And if you're not from New England, you have no idea what an Oddfellows Hall is, probably. But the Oddfellows were sort of a fraternal organization, community organization. And all over New England, they have these big old buildings that are like town halls. And now they're kind of used as community centers and different sorts of things. And this one, the top floor of this Oddfellows Hall, was being used as a movie theater. And it was basically a screen and a bunch of wooden folding seats.
Cool.
You know, not even movie theater seats. Like, there were blinds on the windows that had to be lowered to show the movie. So we went in there to see E.T., and it was packed. Just wall to wall, people standing, sitting on each other's laps. It almost felt like watching a home movie in a way. You know, it was just a bunch of people, because it didn't have that sort of formal feeling of a theater. Felt like you were at somebody's 4th of July barbecue or something. So the energy in the theater or in this room was incredible, and people just were enjoying the movie so much and so engaged in it that I have this memory as a child of just, I think one of the most engaged movie audiences I've ever been with is this viewing of E.T., where everyone's just crammed in, it's hot, there's fans going. I mean, just not the perfect movie viewing environment, but such an engaged audience. And yeah.
You know, Star Wars, we already talked about the fact that we were part of that original childhood that saw Star Wars in its opening frame. But I don't think I was really aware of the phenomenon, like kind of like the when right. I saw, you know, just I was only seven, and I got when I went into the theater, I didn't even know what I was going to see.
Right, right.
So I wasn't aware that it was like already becoming a big sensation. With E.T., what you just described, there was this thing that was going on in the country. I mean, it really was, especially if you look at numbers today, if you took it and adjusted the price. I don't think people could understand just how much of a phenomenon that movie was.
Yeah, and people went and saw it multiple times. I did. I mean, you know, I remember the first time I saw it, I cried like crazy.
I was more up to speed on the movie than you. I mean, I'd seen Poltergeist a few weeks before. Now E.T. was coming out. And I knew enough about the movie that I just had this hunch it was going to be good. I mean, I'd seen a photo of what he looked like. They were keeping a lot of that.
Yeah, they did keep. Well, and the poster was so great because it was just the fingers.
So I knew nothing about what was actually going to happen because Spielberg kept everything so secretive. And opening day, I got my friend Glenn. We were going to go after school. So it was like a 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock show. It was probably 4 o'clock show. And Glenn's mom made us take his younger brother, Mark.
Who was how old?
Well, we would have been almost 12.
Okay.
Mark was probably going to be 9 or 8. Yeah. Because he was a year younger than my sister. He was like 8 or 9, whatever. But he was a tag along.
Right, but old enough to see the movie.
Whenever we had to. Oh, yeah, yeah. Old enough to see the movie, but it was just annoying. It's like, oh, we have to go see it with Mark. So it would be like if I was forced to take my sister or something right. with. But the three of us go and see it. And there was very few people in the audience.
Weird.
For this first show. Well, it was, an afternoon on a Friday.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, geez, you know, I mean, maybe people don't know about it. It's not going to be that big a hit. We go and watch this thing. And, you know, this was right before the summer of, like, right before we were going to go to junior high.
Right.
You know, I remember sitting there with my friend, kind of a macho kid. I don't want to cry in front of my friend. Right. But when E.T., when you think he's dead, I have, like, tears streaming down my face.
Yes.
And I turn, and my friend Glenn's got tears streaming down his face. And this Mark kid, he's, like, inconsolably crying. And it's, like, this emotion. This is the first time I ever remember, like, crying.
Yes.
In a movie. And then, you know, then he's alive, and there's that chase. And then the magic that your hair is standing up on ends of yes. your arms when they go flying past the guys with the guns.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then, of course, the emotional end when he gets on the spaceship and then there's more crying. And when this film was over, I felt like I'd seen the best movie I've ever seen.
Absolutely. It was so electric almost.
And we walk out, and I already feel like special. Like, now I've got to tell the world. We walk out, and I see a line a mile and a half down the hall.
Right.
And going for the 7 o'clock show. And I said to myself, I'm like, this movie's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
And this became a thing where my parents didn't, if I went and saw it, they were kind of like happy I was at the age where they didn't have to go to these movies all the time with me. And then they started hearing about it nonstop from me. I wanted to see it a second time.
Of course.
I think my sister went and saw it with her friends and she loved it. And we were begging our parents to go see it. And my dad finally probably heard enough work that he said, okay, we're going. Now, we never went to the movies at night.
Oh, yeah.
Never. It was always matinees or drive-ins because drive-ins were cheaper. But my dad took us and my mom, like the four of us, went to a night show a couple weeks later. And what you just described with that little town hall meeting place,
yeah.
it was what was going on at the theater at the time. It was like this community experience
yes.
of adults and kids. Like, for the first time in years, a movie that any age could agree on was just a great movie.
Well, and I think that's something, it still exists to an extent, but the shared experience of a movie. Of being with a group of people where everyone in the theater is crying when E.T. dies.
Yeah, you have to be a real cold criminal not to cry.
But yeah, I mean, that's the genius of Spielberg, especially in that era, is that he made four quadrant movies. You know, the last movie I think of that really was big in that way was Avatar.
Yeah, those people that maybe go see one or two movies every 5 years.
Right. It got those people out, and it was a shared experience. People hadn't seen something like it before. Of course, now we have to look forward to Avatar 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, all coming out in the next 2 years.
And I always think that James Cameron, you know, it's like, oh, this is the time where he's going to fail. But so many times, you think he's going to fail, and it's right. So I'm going to just reserve judgment to see what happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know if lightning's going to catch a second time, but we'll see.
Maybe a second, third, fourth, and fifth time.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have enough? There's barely enough story in the first movie. I mean, when you call something unobtainium, that you're stretching.
You're really stretching.
But anyways, so guess what? You know, we're not really a Marvel-sanctioned program here, and we don't really talk about that too often, but there is a movie coming out.
Yes.
There's the Brie Larson extravaganza, Captain Marvel.
Captain
the Marvel is right in the title
yes.
this time. And I got to be honest, I'm a person, when it comes to Marvel movies these days, I got to see something in the trailer that makes me want to go see it because it's sort of run by the boys.
Yeah.
If my boys really want to see it, okay. But if they don't really make a peep, I'm probably not going. And I didn't think the preview looked very good for Captain Marvel. And so I'm out.
I'm in.
And tell me, why are you in?
And I'm in because my daughter wants to see it and because there are so few films with female leads. We had Wonder Woman a couple of years ago. And
which we did see. The whole family wanted to see that.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman, I thought, was great for what it is.
For what it is, yeah. It's a superhero movie.
It's a superhero movie.
But she was so good in it. She transcended the material.
But I do, you know, I do try to find movies that have a good female lead. You know, when I was a kid, there were no movies with female superheroes.
This is true. Thankfully, there wasn't a lot of movies with superheroes. You're right.
There weren't a lot of superhero movies, but even still, there weren't a lot of movies with, you know, with a female, with a good female lead. And
we had Jodie Foster as a kid. That was it.
Yeah, that was about it.
And I'm not joking. When I say it was Jodie Foster, it was Jodie Foster or bust.
Yes, that's pretty much it for live action anyway. So I'm going to go see it. My daughter wants to see it. I like to take her to movies that have female leads. And, you know, since she was pretty young, since she was 5 or 6, she's been mostly interested in movies that have girl. You know, she'll always ask, is there a girl in it? When I suggest a movie. And some movies she just hasn't wanted to watch because there's no girl character.
And, you know, I think you bring up a very interesting point. And that it may be something that if you didn't have daughters and you just had sons like me,
yeah,
it may not be something that you really thought twice about.
I didn't at all.
You really, really start to look and go, Hollywood does not really serve up a lot of female-focused stories.
It doesn't, yeah.
Or stories that don't involve a woman and her, you know, trouble with a man or something.
Exactly, yeah. Well, there's the Bechdel test, right?
Right, yeah. I don't know. Could you just explain that for the audience who doesn't understand what that means?
Yeah, that means that the movie has a scene in it with two women talking where they don't talk about men. It's because so many women's parts and women's roles in stories even are focused around the men. Are there movies that are focused around the women and not as supporting to men, not as something to be fought over, not as something to be rescued, but actually as somebody who has agency and can make decisions in the story?
Take it even further steps. How many films that meet that criteria are also either written and or directed by women? There aren't a lot.
There are very few.
You start adding those layers, and now you've got a very small handful.
I have a list of these movies with good female leads in them. And probably the top rated movie on my list is Alien.
Or what about Aliens?
Well, both of those. They're both R rated. So I can't, you know, both Alien and Aliens. 30 years ago, that was the closest we had to a female superhero at the time, was Ripley.
And Ripley was originally supposed to be a man.
Yes, exactly.
There's your first superhero.
Yes.
That's an interesting take. I mean, again, I'm just still very fascinated by this dilemma that you have having daughters. And they want to see, they like movies,
yeah,
and especially your oldest. But she wants to see stories that can inspire her,
yes,
and not just be, you know, male-oriented. And I had to go through my own kind of mental closet,
yeah,
to think about what films aren't just kind of pandering to a female audience, something that might be unique. And I there's a movie. This is tough because,
yeah,
the movies that I'm going to mention are so rare that they're not even necessarily available right away.
Right.
We might be able to get our hands on them. But there was a film that was a childhood favorite of mine, which just shows you a great movie doesn't have to be for a girl or a
right.
boy. This happened to be a story that was really, we talk about just focused mostly on women and teenage girls. And I think that your daughter, or at least your oldest one, would probably
right.
love this movie. It's a movie called The Trouble with Angels.
Oh, yes. Okay. I've never seen it.
It features Haley Mills, and she is sent away to a Catholic boarding school.
Okay.
And she's a bit of a troublemaker because she's coming from a family of divorce, and she's being sort of shipped away because her father's got maybe a new girlfriend and she's just in the way. And she quickly meets somebody who's in a similar circumstance as her, and they become, you know, roommates and best friends, and they spend the movie terrorizing the nuns.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
And they get into all sorts of hijinks.
Here's the other thing about this movie. It's directed by a woman.
Ida Lupino.
Yes.
One of the very first working film directors who was a woman.
Well,
one of them. I didn't say the first. I said one of. There's only a few, but like it was very rare. And she was an actress who forced herself into the role of director.
Yes.
And said, I can direct movies and you're going to let me.
Just on a little side note here. In the silent era, there were more female directors.
But this movie, it has an amazing heart. It's got a great score by Jerry Goldsmith.
Oh.
It's a great film that really focuses on what it is to be a teenage girl.
Yeah.
Going through things like about like thinking about life and what decisions they want to make in the future.
Okay, I will. I'm gonna try to track it down.
And I remember seeing it at my grandmother's house. It was something that my mom and her sister loved growing up. So when it came on, we all watched it, and I loved it. One of my favorites.
Okay, I really want to check it out, and we'll definitely. It sounds like my oldest will like it.
I think so.
She's a little easier to pick for because, you know, she can watch PG-13 stuff. I'm a six-year-old.
I don't know what to... I mean, I can. There's very few movies I could think of that I could offer your daughter because the stuff that they make for six-year-olds that are girls were all Disney-making princess movies.
Yes, they're all... And I. She's not... She hates princesses, actually.
You know, I mean, I think Disney got a little bit better about their princesses over
they
the
years.
They
have over the last decade, maybe.
But it's still... Princesses.
It's still princesses. Moana is still a princess.
You know, there's a couple of movies that came out in the 90s. One with Reese Witherspoon called A Far Off Place.
Yes.
There was another one with Christina Ricci and Anna Chlumsky called Gold Diggers.
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. And then there's, and then of course, Anna Chlumsky did, My Girl.
Right.
Which is not for the 7-year-old.
It's not 6-year-old. No, it's not for the 6-year-old.
Then there's that I'll Fly Away Home with Anna Paquin.
I love. Oh, that was directed by Caleb Deschanel.
Yes. Was it shot by him? I don't know. Was it directed by him?
No, it's directed by Carol Ballard.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go. Oh, and they both of them worked together on The Black Stallion.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Fly Away Home.
That's a great.
Fly Away Home is a great movie. Another one that. I think sort of fits in that category is Rabbit Proof Fence.
Oh, you know, you and I saw that together.
Yes, we did.
And that is an excellent film. I completely forgot, not that I didn't forget about that movie, but I forgot that it's a female journey.
Yes, it's three sisters on a journey across the Australian outback. And it's a survival story and a journey. And it's a great movie. And it also just deals with larger issues of race and... how society is working and all these sorts of things. But yeah, Philip Noyce directed it.
Yes.
Rabbit Proof Fence from 2002. It's a great, great younger girls movie. And I think also, I could keep going on my list, but.
Well, you know, it's funny. Another Outback movie is Walkabout.
Yes.
That, you know, older sister has to kind of protect her younger brother and get through the Outback.
Another movie that... And this is G-rated.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that.
And the filmmaker is now incredibly famous. And one of his earliest films was A Little Princess.
Oh, Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes, Alfonso Cuarón's A Little Princess from 1995.
I saw that in the theater.
Yeah.
I think I saw it with my sister. And I didn't like it at the time.
Right.
I don't know if I haven't seen it since then because... I was such a massive fan of the original Shirley Temple version
from
1938, which is like this early Technicolor movie.
Yeah, I've seen it.
That was just very hard for me to get away from that original film. And that's the only reason. Otherwise, I'd say, yes, you're right. It's a great movie to check out.
Yeah, and it's beautifully shot and directed. Thinking about Judy Garland, my oldest, when she was about 6 or 7, loved Judy Garland. Another thing that she got obsessed with at one point was Alice in Wonderland. And this started with the Disney version. Then we watched every filmed version of Alice in Wonderland.
Hopefully she doesn't like that awful Johnny Depp one.
No, here's the funny thing.
It really is bad.
We never watched it. That was the one we didn't see.
Yeah, I couldn't get through the second one, but the first one was pretty bad.
Yeah, wasn't interested in it, but she had an Alice in Wonderland fixation for a while. And then a Wizard of Oz one, too, which sort of led into a Judy Garland thing. We watched Easter Parade over and over again at one point. These were not movies I was into as a kid, and so it's kind of fun for me. It opens up a whole, like, you know, I didn't see Mary Poppins until I had kids.
I didn't see the new one. My wife just loved it because she is like a huge original Mary Poppins fan. I saw Mary Poppins as a kid at the drive-ins, and I think I was just at the wrong age to really enjoy it. But I understand that, you know, again, my wife, it was an important movie for her.
But yeah, I didn't see it as a kid.
Well, of course, because your mom doesn't let you watch a Disney movie.
Well, that's my point. Yes.
The World of Henry Orient.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it.
I thought you did.
No.
See, I feel like you and I, we were obsessed when we were living together with this movie.
No.
Do you know the story? It's these two girls. Yeah. They come from like sort of different backgrounds in Manhattan, and they go to school together, and the two kind of go on these adventures, and they start getting obsessed with this concert conductor,
right.
Henry Orient,
okay.
Who does like avant-garde music.
Okay.
And they start following him all around, and they're obsessed. They follow him in Central Park, and they go to his apartment, and they just won't leave him alone, and he's getting driven up a tree by these two girls. But what I like about it is it's very focused, again, on two teenage girls coming of age.
Right.
And what was funny, and this is what I swear we used to talk about Henry Orient.
No.
But one time I had a Henry Orient experience when we were living together. It was that fall. I know it sounds funny, but like really I was. Is that one night I was coming home from work at the photo department at NYU. And I'm walking the streets back to our apartment in the East Village. And at some point when we're getting closer to the apartment, I had this weird feeling like I was being followed. And it was getting closer and closer. And in New York, you know, you got that sense because you didn't want to get mugged. So if somebody was following you, you kind of felt it. And I'd look back and there'd be nobody there. And then as we got closer, I thought I heard some giggling. And I look back and I caught them.
Oh.
These two girls, freshmen, photo students. These girls were named Mary Ellen and Kamala.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
And they used to pester me at the photo cage. And they just basically, I became their little mini fascination. And they thought, let's find out, like, what is his life like after work? Like, where does he live? What it was about? So they decided to follow me. And, of course, I caught them. And I don't remember if they came up to the apartment that time, but I ended up going out to like coffee with them or something. But and then they became friends, and they actually did come over a few times. But it was just funny that they pulled a Henry Orient on me.
That is hilarious.
So I've seen the movie recently in you know, the past few years, and it's really well shot, and it's done by George Roy Hill.
Yeah.
But it's just another film that a lot of people probably don't even know. Clearly, you haven't seen it, and I think
I haven't seen it, but I definitely will now.
I think it's interesting because it does at least focus on girls.
I'm about to enter the coming of age film zone.
Yes. Well, that's a coming of the age film,
yeah.
And so is another movie that is it's part Henry Orient, and it's part Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead is Dick.
Yes. Yes.
Which is from the same director as Bring It On and the Ant-Man movies.
Bring It On is a really enjoyable movie.
Have you seen Dick ever?
Yes, I've seen Dick. Yes.
Yeah.
And I like
it. It's a fun. I mean, I look at it from the standpoint of I haven't thought about that movie much since I saw it in the theater years ago. But if you're looking for films that focus on female characters,
that's a pretty good one. And, you know, some things I have on my list are not good movies.
Well, I didn't say anything about these movies being good or bad.
Let me throw out some of the not so good ones.
Okay.
but this one's interesting to think about. It's not a very good movie, but it's interesting to think about. The Next Karate Kid.
Don't you hate that?
Hate what?
Uncomfortable silences.
Hilary Swank.
With Hilary Swank as the Karate Kid. Now, here's the thing. I don't think any of the Karate Kid movies are very good.
Oh, shame on you, sir.
Except the first one.
Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah. After that, the sequels, whatever. So this one, as far as I'm concerned, The Next Karate Kid, not a great movie, but it's just about as good as any of the other sequels to The Karate Kid. And but it stars a girl. It's a girl Karate Kid, so I think it's worth it just for that fact. You know, and then there's like action movies like Tomb Raider.
The new one or the other one?
The Angelina Jolie.
You ever see her in that her first like big movie, Foxfire?
Oh, yes. Foxfire is great.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe your daughter's still a little bit too young,
no,
but it's all focused on women.
It's a teen movie. Yeah. Based, I think, on a Joyce Carol Oates story. You know, Angelina Jolie's done a couple of these like Salt.
Yeah, it was okay.
Again, okay, but it's an action movie with a woman. Okay, a couple other titles. Whale Rider.
Yeah, not one of my favorite movies, but it's definitely, again, if we're focused on looking for films that feature a female protagonist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Emma.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Emma's pretty good. Another action film, Hannah, which I guess is now going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Hannah is great.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ending is not so great, but for most of it, awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Great action film with a teenage girl. Rated PG-13, but whatever.
Now, I don't know. Maybe it'd be too boring for your youngest, but your oldest might like it. What about Beasts of the Southern Wild?
Yes, that's definitely on my list. I think she would like that.
Now, here's one. And again, I don't think it's for your youngest because there's subtitles.
You're right.
But here's a movie that we watched because of the Criterion Filmstruck. And my wife really, really loved it, but it focuses on two young girls and their journey. And there's not a lot of dialogue in the movie, which is why the subtitles really don't matter that much. It's called Spirit of the Beehive.
Oh, okay.
It's frequently regarded as one of Spain's all-time best films.
Right, right.
And it is a great little nugget, a slice of life. And it takes place, I think, I want to say 30s in Spain, and a small town. And just as you described with your E.T. story, traveling film studios, they'd come.
Right. And they come and set up in your town.
They set up in the town hall, and people would set up little wooden seats and they would show a movie and then they would take off. And they're showing Frankenstein.
Oh,
and
cool.
The little girls go, they'd be like, people in the town wouldn't even know what the movie is. And even someone asked, he's like, oh, it's this really good movie. You're going to like this Frankenstein. And the girls go in and it kind of profoundly affects them.
Cool.
And this is sort of like around the time of the Spanish Civil War. And there's some of that aspect in the movie too. But one girl starts to have nightmares because of Frankenstein. And it's a really good movie.
Okay.
I think you will love it. You got to check it out.
I will definitely check it out. And speaking of foreign language films, one that my oldest really loved was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, that's a great film too. And you know what? It's a great female empowerment story.
Exactly why I wanted her to see it.
And one movie you mentioned that she really liked was Paper Moon.
She loved Paper Moon. Yeah.
Paper Moon is a great film from the early 70s.
Yes, and it's a father-daughter story, but a great kid character who's a real character, not just treated as... It's so often in movies, kids are just accessories. She's not an accessory to this movie.
No, she's like the heart of the story.
She's the heart of the story, really, yeah. And what's great about that movie also is it taught my daughter how to shortchange people.
She was running around trying to sell Bibles with gold embossing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, it turned her into a con artist.
Oh, the movies, teaching the youth of America. Is there any other films that you might recommend to people who are looking to, show their kids movies with strong female leads?
Contact.
It's not the greatest movie, but... Sure.
When you're in the Zemeckisphere, you got to stop by at a
stop by a contact.
Stop by a contact. Okay, this is R-rated, but probably my daughter will see it soon. Amelie.
I was just gonna say Amelie. I love Amelie. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love Amelie.
And I think
too.
She should see it. And honestly. Like, I would have no problem with my son watching it.
Oh, yeah.
After all, he's seen Pulp Fiction.
Right.
He can see Amelie.
No, I just haven't seen it in a while, so I don't know what...
There's a scene. You know, there's that scene in the cafe where there's a couple in the back kind of having sex, and you can hear everything's, like, shaking and moving, and Amelie's getting a real kick out of it.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But, I mean, really? Like, is that something that a daughter of yours is going to have a problem with?
She gets a little squeamish around kissing stuff in movies.
Amelie's a great movie. She
Amelie's
see it. What
great.
About Lady Bird, too? Lady Bird.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
There's a, it's rated R. I would have no problem with my son watching it, but I do think that it's a great, written and directed by a woman.
Right.
Which I think is important. And it was nominated last year for several awards, and it's really good.
Okay.
What about eighth grade?
Haven't seen it
yet. Has she seen it? No.
No, I want to watch it first.
It's not
before.
R, though, right?
Is it R? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think so. And a matter of fact, this is so funny. We watched it, and now I have to think back, and I'll have to ask my wife, was my son watching it with us? I feel like he was, but I don't,
well, you can't remember
if he did or not. No, I don't know. But, you know, it's totally.
It's rated R.
Totally something. I think it is.
Yeah.
Maybe we did let him watch it. I think we did just because we thought it would be important for him to watch a film like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, because maybe it's a bullying or whatever. Right. And, you know, that was a good teaching moment.
We just watched the Hunger Games movies.
Yeah, and did she like those?
Well, she read the books and loved the books.
Okay.
And so the
movie. Well, that doesn't mean you're going to like the movies.
Yeah, so she liked the movies. I mean, she doesn't think they're the greatest movies ever, but she enjoyed them as, you know, a compliment to the book.
And you watched them all.
And I watched them all.
Are you like me that they went a bridge too far by breaking that last movie into two parts?
I would not have minded if it was a 2.5 hour movie, but as a 4.5 hour movie, it's way too long.
Sometimes the magic of movies is what they can cut out. And then yet you see this when they put all the stuff that you're like, yeah, there was no need for that.
Yeah. And, you know, it didn't bother her because, of course, it's all stuff from the book.
Here's the good news is, right, through this little journey of ours, we've just rattled off a lot of titles.
Yeah, I got a couple more I'll just throw out here. Arrival. Did I say Arrival yet?
No, but that's a good one.
Yep. Hidden Figures.
That's another good one.
Coraline.
Excellent one.
Sabrina.
The Teenage Witch.
No.
The one with Harrison Ford?
The one with Humphrey Bogart and Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, the original one. Okay. Yeah. And William Holden.
Freedom Writers.
I didn't see that one.
Another Hillary Swank movie. It's a you know, it's a teaching movie, but
oh, right. Freedom. Okay.
Yeah,
I remember.
Let's see what else do I got here. Aquila and the Bee.
Didn't see it.
A League of Their Own.
Didn't like it.
Me neither.
What about like another one that Penny Marshall did, Riding in Cars with Boys?
Haven't seen it.
Oh, it's for older.
Okay,
kids,
that's kind of my impression.
Just letting you know.
Legally Blonde.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my daughter.
I liked it.
Yeah, my daughter really wants. I think we're watching that this weekend. She wants to see it.
Mm. See, and of course, my tastes are a little bit more on the artsy side. But I think that, you know, maybe give it a year or two. I think she could really like Peter Weir's Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Yes, I think so, too. Oh, and she does like those, you know, recent favorite. I think I mentioned this on the show, but Moonrise Kingdom she loved, which is, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yes.
It's a definitely great one. What about the Cassavetes, Jenna Rollins' Gloria?
Oh.
Not any of the remakes they did.
No.
The original one.
Not that hard.
I like that one. It's like she's really hard-boiled in that.
Yeah. Wow. I hadn't thought about that movie in a long time.
Just popped into my brain. Yeah. And I just think that I remember seeing that in the theater. My mom wanted to. I think it was because I saw a Siskel and Ebert show on it. And, man, she's just kick-ass. She was like a mall for the mob.
Yes, exactly. And she's protecting this kid.
Yeah. But she's like, you know, I mean, talk about strong female hero.
Yeah. Okay. That might be a good one to watch, actually.
Yep.
If you're listening and you think of some movies we didn't list off for this, let us know.
That's right. We have a website. We have an email address, feedback@jimandteal.com. And then the stuffweveseen.com is the website.
Yes.
And, we'll take suggestions.
We'll take suggestions. Yes, we will. Yeah. We'll talk about what you want to hear.
Well, everyone, go out and see some female-oriented hero movies if you can.
Yes.
I guess we have one.
Especially if you have daughters.
Captain Marvel. If you want them to make more, you've got to go see it.
Yep. That's exactly why I'll be going.
Believe me, they're going to be making more of those Marvel movies. They have a whole slate. They have a whole 5-10-year plan.
I think actually it's a 100-year plan now.
Well, it'll just be interesting because one of these days, and I don't know when it'll be because we don't seem to be able to get enough globally of these movies. One of these movies is going to tank and tank hard and
yes.
is going to send shockwaves and panic
yes.
into the industry because they are putting all their chips in the superhero basket. And one day when that goes down, they have nothing else.
It is. And it is going to go down. It's going to burn itself out.
I don't know when. I mean, I'm burnt out, and I'm just being honest. I mean, I showed up every one of those movies opening weekend for a while.
Yeah, I just, boy, they're just all the same.
Well, that's my biggest thing. And I say, like I said, you know, when we talked about, well, we haven't really talked much about it, but my whole beef with Black Panther is that it really is just the same as all the other ones, but maybe a little different.
It's the same as all the other ones, but a little bit better in certain ways.
Yeah. And of course, they make these mistakes where there are no stakes. Like even with this Avengers thing, half the world and all the universe is gone. But you get this sense that in the next movie, they're going to find a way to put it all back together again.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, the ending didn't have any impact on me because I was like, well, I'll just see him in the next movie.
Well, it's like Pirates of the Caribbean. How many times can you kill ghosts who are dead anyway so they're not really able to be killed?
Yeah, I stopped watching those movies at some point.
Exactly. At some point, you got to stop. And now, as we close the show, I am going to mention my big Marvel gripe.
Okay.
And it's a sort of, it's my own rules of believability. So obviously, in these superhero movies, you know, you have to basically check believability at the door, right? However, there are still rules that you must follow. And in the latest Ant-Man movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I finally caught when the kids were on winter break.
Okay.
I watched it on Netflix, I guess it was on.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix.
I had no interest in seeing it in the theater, but I put it on one morning and we all watched it. And none of us thought it was very good. But my biggest problem was that... Did you see it?
No.
Okay.
I saw the first Ant-Man, but...
Yeah. The first one was way better than the second one.
My six-year-old does not want to see the first one. She wants to see the second one because of the Wasp character.
Well, she'd get ready for disappointment.
Yeah.
But here's my thing. They have this big lab, a secret lab that's in this building that they shrink down into like a briefcase.
Uh-huh.
And then they move to wherever location. Though I would imagine if you were in a vacant lot somewhere and this big lab showed up that you might be suspicious. But that's not the believability problem. The believability problem is they zap it down to a suitcase and then cart it away. And then you look, and it's like there's nothing on – it's just ground. But where's the plumbing? Where's the electricity? How is this facility running? It doesn't make any sense. And if they're moving it around in a cart, you'd think that things would, like, jiggle and be a mess when you set it back up. And that becomes a believability issue for me, even within the world of Ant-Man. That I could buy someone shrinking. I could buy ants that can fly and – help them out.
Right.
You can't buy an entire building shrinking down and then just being carted away without water shooting out of the ground afterwards. Because how do they go to the bathroom and wash up? I mean, they're doing experiments in there.
That is hilarious.
But this, when I watched, that's like took me right out of the movie because I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the amazing thing. Nobody thought of that. Nobody said, wait a minute.
Well, they need to hire me as a consultant because I'll go through and say, have you thought of this? Or to any movie, I could point out, why are you doing this? It's just because if I can spot it in like 10 seconds of watching something, they should be able to spot it when they're planning. But I think this is where I feel they betray the other. They're like, audiences don't give a crap. We'll just do it. We know it's silly, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Yeah. No, they just don't have respect for the audience, really.
But then I also watched Deadpool 2. Oh. And I hated the first Deadpool. But I felt for some reason we felt we should watch it. It was on cable. We'll watch a second one. And I will admit, for some reason, the second one I thought was funny. And what I liked about it is it was basically saying these comic book movies are bags of crap.
Right.
They have bad plots. And we're going to point that out to you every step of the way of this movie to tell you how stupid you are for liking them and that they're so unbelievable. And the movie is an entire way more than the first movie. This film is a commentary on how stupid it is to fall for these superhero movies. It was brilliant.
Okay. That makes me want to watch it.
I was shocked. I actually am giving a thumbs up review to Deadpool 2.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that.
It was hilarious. And for everything, I didn't laugh once in the first Deadpool movie.
No, neither did I.
But if something worked for me in this one that I really liked that they were going full throttle on the fact that, can you believe that you fall for it every time? And look, this is what you're falling for. It was great.
I did laugh in the first Deadpool movie when the person sitting next to me on the plane rented it for their 7-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's another, you know, that's a different topic for movies, and movies where basically people don't care. They let their kids watch films like Pulp Fiction when they're 10 years old, totally inappropriate. Well, I wouldn't let them watch that on a plane.
Well, that's, you know. No, but it was clear that the parent just actually had no idea what the movie was, and it was just superhero movie. That's for kids.
Oh, I've seen things in theaters where parents are dragging their 3 or 4 year old to a movie that... Yeah, that you shouldn't even expose them to the things
right.
that they might see.
Yeah.
But anyways, listen, kids, this is about all the time we have for today. So we're going to wrap up, and I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have.
Yeah,
I
enjoyed
really
it
about
too.
What we enjoy.
It's really about
enjoy.
Us. It's all about us.
Yeah, and if you just happen to listen along, that's great. Well, all right, everybody. Have a pleasant tomorrow.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.